Congratulations, Congressman.
Thank you. It's exciting times. We're all pumped, ready to go to work, and we know some of the direction that we're going to be headed. And of course, the president-elect is kind of a wild card. We know where he'll be some places, some areas we don't, but we're all pretty excited about it, to tell you the truth.
And you know, it's interesting, John, I think as I try to put myself in your shoes and big picture this, I can see at a time where a Republican on the House floor might feel subdued, repressed, you know, literally held down from what you hope to accomplish by one administration and what the dramatic change of the presidency, since you've seen it both ways, and what we see coming down the pipe, that I would think that you would, of all people, understand the opportunity that exists in particular over the next 4 years, and even more so over the next two, hopefully four, if things are accomplished in two. And then, of course, the reelection of President Trump, as he's already talked about in interviews. There's a change. There's an opportunity here. And there are a lot of areas in which to work.
Well, there's a lot of pent-up frustration. And I'm trying to put it in some analogy. It's like being in a small high school gym at a very contentious basketball game where you win, but you're caught up in the gym and you can't. Trump allows us to break out of the gym and flood the streets, and and then really make some of those changes, and that we've been held back because constitutionally the president has to sign a bill to become law. It's just.
Right.
We've talked about it numerous times,
yes.
And now we have a president who will sign it. He can roll back some of the executive orders that have occurred. I think that'll happen day one. So it is time to get government back inside the box and out of our individual lives, and that's what I think drives most of us.
I mean, when I look at your press release from earlier this week on the swearing-in, your statement is, if we ever had a chance to roll back job-killing regulations, streamlining government, reduce the burden on the average American, now is the time. So let's take a look at some of these transition items. Clearly, the early opening salvos, the transition had all the appearances of being smooth. It's not. UN, Gitmo, Russian hacking, Obamacare, the credibility of the intelligence community in the way it's interpreted by the media. Donald Trump says the media has misinterpreted him. But let's take a look at this transition. Clearly, the president wanted to reach outside of his term with his policy, especially when it comes to the UN and Israel.
Yeah, I've been kind of surprised. They just don't understand that they, or maybe they do, and they just had an electoral shellacking. I mean, and the administration, President Obama, has really led that for the past 6 years. I mean, they lost the House, they lost the Senate, then they lost the presidency, and they keep trying to point fingers as to it's somebody's fault other than their own policies. Now, they continue to double down on their failed policies as they go outside the door. I just don't get it. I think I would look at the thing and say, okay, you know, the pendulum's moving back the other way. Let's, you know, get done. Let the other administration come in and see what they can do. It's just very curious that they are just doubling down on this. And I think the public sees it, and they're just going, come on. You lost. leave sooner rather than later.
Right. And you would think so, but I wonder now, because of some of the things that people say and do, that the same courtesies that were extended by much of the Republican Party to President Obama, there is no clearly reciprocal agreement.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to go back to, you know, I never like saying, well, he did this to me, and they did
right.
that to us, and we treated you fairly, and you didn't. I like to live kind of for the day, and that's why I've been focused on they continue to double down, and we're just trying to move into transition. Now with the new Congress, we're already starting to move bills that President-elect Trump will be able to sign. We're doing it right now while President Obama still, you know, in essence, still the president.
Right.
Because we're in the new Congress. So we are moving past this. Other than what the president can do on regulatory and their statements, and yeah, it's very frustrating.
Well, you know, I never until you just said it, John, Congressman John Chimka is joining us today. It never occurred to me that now that we're in the 115th Congress since Monday, that you would be doing show prep for the first day of the president. It really, until you just said it, never occurred. You can do a lot of forward planning, so he's got a place to land with his presidential pen. Executive orders, of course, are one item, but legislative is another. And you have many times, especially in relationship to Obamacare, says, look, we sent the legislation to the president's desk. He's not going to sign it. The Senate's not going to cooperate. Well, that's changed. Will Obamacare go away, and how soon? And the other question that everybody wants to know, especially the media, is what will be it be replaced with anything?
Yeah, well, and let me just add one more thing, and I'll go into that question, is, you know, the Senate will start having their hearings on these Trump appointees for these positions starting next week. That kind of also tells a story how we're already transitioning to the new president,
John,
versus worried about what this president
is. John, that's going to be a bloody three-ring circus, isn't it?
Well, some of them will be, but if you, unfortunately, in this world today, if you want to serve your country in elected office or appointed office, you've got to be prepared to, you know, have your boxers examined. You know, I mean, it's
right.
Just the way we operate now, and some will survive, maybe a couple won't. But then, you know, there's a lot of people in this country. Someone else can step up to the plate. I'm not even that worried about the process. Some of these folks are my friends. There's a lot of them are members of the House, like Dr. Price for HHS and Ryan Zinke for Interior. Good, honorable, credible men that I think will eventually fare well. But they're gonna be examined. Now on to, you know, repeal and replace. I told in a meeting a day or two ago, you know, by 2018, we better have sent a signal to our base that we're repealing and replacing. You know, so the rig debate here, I think what the Democrats and the liberals are trying to say is 20 million, you're going to drop them, and now you're just going to walk away from the sick and the infirmed. Well, as you know, you cover this all the time. We talk about it every time we mention. People will have it. They don't really have insurance. So they're paying for something they can't use because they can't afford the deductibles or they can't afford the copays. So it and the other issue is, you look at the real numbers aren't nearly as glowing as if the system was working, they'd still be in power.
Well, here's the thing, John. You said $20 million, isn't it? 20 million people now have insurance as a result of Obamacare. Isn't it closer to 17 when they originally said 8 years ago that it would be 50 million?
Yeah, I think it's really more 11.9 if you start calculating those who lost insurance.
Yeah,
those policies that they liked, because, and you know, if you have a policy you like, you could keep it. Well, that didn't. Yeah, you know, if the cost of insurance would go down, what, $2,500? It went up $2,500. So just failure. That's what the other thing, when we were talking earlier, the continual failure, and they keep doubling down on their failure. So I'm not really worried. I think in my area, people know it's failures. We have to repeal. We need to replace it with something. I'm a private market guy. I believe in competitive markets, and let's get people into those markets and let them pick and choose the policies that best serve their individual needs. Now, the real challenge we're going to have is that, you know, people have policies now for this year, and insurance commissioners are already trying to develop plans and go through the process for 2018. So that's where you hear the 2 or the 3 years. I hope we're done by 2 years. I don't want to go before a general election in 2018 having not repealed and replaced this bill. And that's kind of my line to my leadership. I think some of the senators are a little more squeamish, especially some of our moderate senators, and they're saying, oh, we've got to do 3, we've got to do 5-year transition. I don't want to go down that route. I want to repeal and replace as soon as possible.
John, I can tell you this. In meeting and talking with people, point blank, from eye to eye, one is they want it repealed now. And when I say now, I mean yesterday, because they have a bill sitting in their desk. They have a bill sitting on their kitchen table with a magnet onto their refrigerator that they can't pay, but they don't have any choice to buy. And they're saying that's 2 house payments.
Right.
I can't keep this job anymore. They can't wait 2 years.
They are being forced to buy insurance that doesn't cover them.
Yes.
It's like, so repeal the individual mandate.
You know what? A 72-year-old guy wants to know why he's paying for insurance for birth control.
Yeah, I know.
But the people out there that I meet, in particular single females who are employed, seem to me to be the most often to come to me and show me their insurance bills, and can you believe this? what I paid for $400, I'm now paying this year $1,700. Some of these bills are they show me the bills. They're not redacted. This is the bill. One of them works at the insurance company, and she's going, I can't pay this. I can't live this. This is my house. My husband's died. I can't pay this. Yeah. So this specifically to you, John, because I know you watch this very closely. Now, and I need some help because I don't know the answer. We apparently have made a decision to send special forces into Lithuania along the Russian border, and that we will also do it with Estonia and I think one other state, that we are moving U.S. special forces to the border with Russia as we speak and over the next month.
Right. So we've had a rotational brigade. The country's always been hesitant to forward base permanently NATO troops into Eastern European countries until Russia did the Ukrainian thing. Now, so what Obama did, which I'll give him credit for, he did what he kind of termed it rotational permanent or permanently rotational, where they would move a brigade in for about 4 to 6 months and then move another brigade in. So we've had a brigade in the Baltics. Now there's stories about special operations on the borders. The borders are contentious. And there's a story 2 years ago where Russians crossed over the border in Estonia and grabbed a policeman and drug him back across the line and held him for about a year and called him a spy. So I think it's to help, and there's two issues. I think it obviously has helped special operations, especially Green Berets, work with indigenous populations, know the language, and help create self-defense or counter special op forces, and that's kind of what they do. There's another border with Lithuania in what's called the Kaliningrad Enclave. Now, that's a piece of land that used to be the Danzig Corridor during World War II between Poland and Lithuania. And there's a slice of territory, I'd encourage your listeners to pull it up on the map, that is the Soviet Union's, and it's in between Lithuania and Poland. And it has a naval base, and that's where you hear the talk about pre-positioning more nuclear missiles in that enclave. And I think some of the special operation border talk is for the border in the Kaliningrad enclave.
And people coming across the border, because they realize you talked about this, the snabbing the police officer. Well, just take a look at the Ukraine, the way that went on.
Yeah.
And
that was obviously with more forces. And the terminology Eastern Europeans use is little green men, because they had all the marks of Russian soldiers.
Yes, little green men.
Without the patches.
Right, little green men, as they were referred to.
Right.
Had we shown a more strident approach to Russia's treatment of Ukraine, would we be moving special forces into Lithuania and Estonia if we would have drawn a line and observed it? And I don't mean start bombing people, but at least give the appearance that we're going to live up to the commitment, which we have through NATO and the North Atlantic Treaty with Ukraine to protect them.
Yeah, and that's the problem with Ukraine and the country called Georgia, is that they were slow to look to the West. They really want to go to the left, but they didn't have their act together in time for NATO invitation. So they're not members of NATO. They want to be members of NATO. But now the country of Georgia, two provinces are occupied by Russians. So that's not going to happen with them anytime soon. And the same thing with Ukraine. Now with them annexing Crimea, now you have sovereign Ukrainian territory seized and held, and they're not going to give it up by the Russian state. So they're going to have problems joining NATO with their internal problems of Russian occupation.
John, are we seeing a Cold War? I mean, with the hacking?
Absolutely.
Yes, because, see, the thing is we're not talking about this. We're talking about the Kardashians, and we're talking about this and that, but we're not talking about the fact that we have seen a tit-for-tat between Russia and us, not in the media, but in military. We're moving bombers into the Norway-Sweden area.
You've seen the films of the Russian planes.
Yes.
Strafing without using bullets are ships.
Right.
And flying right over their bows.
The Brinkman ship there. And then, of course, by the way, Syria has announced this morning, according to the BBC, that, the Russians have announced they are pulling the aircraft carrier off the coast of Syria because they've succeeded. That's the way they look at it. Mission accomplished, I guess. But these pieces have been moving on the board. And they have been, and once upon a time, we would have all known this in the United States of America. This thing was going on, but we're kind of, they call it saber rattling, but we've come up to the point where we're kind of pushing shoulders against each other now, one in the media and one in the very real European arena when it comes to military forces. We are both staring at each other across the line.
Well, and this, I don't want to kick the administration as it's walking out the door, but remember, they're the ones who wanted to reset policy with Russia.
Yeah. Yes.
And they reset it in Russia's favor.
And Secretary of State
too
Clinton
too weak to stand up to him.
And Secretary of State Clinton reigning to selling 20% of the U.S. uranium resources here in America to Russia, in exchange for what appears to be a rather large contribution to the Clinton Foundation. I mean, there's a lot of things here that aren't being talked about that are deeply concerning. But I'm running out of time. One, for Southern Illinois Congressman, can Donald Trump do anything to save coal in Southern Illinois and the hundreds of jobs we've lost?
I think he can stop the bleeding. The question is, when a mine closes, as you know, they're hard to open. Takes a lot of capital. But I do think the bleeding can be stopped. I think he'll immediately from day one roll back executive regulation called the Stream Protection Rule, which is damaging to the coal industry. I think we're going to have to move stuff in the Congress on the definition of clean air and CO2 and criteria pollutants to, again, provide the industry the security that they're not, carbon dioxide is not a toxic pollutant as defined by the administration. So we will see, I'm really hoping that we stop the bleeding. The other problem is coal mining has technologically advanced. You just have less miners mining more coal, and the natural gas competition is big, and it's cutting into the ability of coal generation to price competitively with natural gas.
You know, this torture video out of Chicago has some troubling elements to it. I mean, it's just hard to watch, and you just grimace. Have you seen it by chance, John, or at least small?
I've read about it. I have not looked at it personally.
It's troubling, and there's an unedited version out there that's pretty raw. And I mean, you get this up on Facebook, people like this. But the part that I want to talk to you about is when a young man is held down and say, "You must say F Trump." That political element to it, that it's not about white, black, maybe so much as it is about who got elected for president. That aspect of me really has me kind of concerned that this is just one isolated keyhole insight into that age group and what they will do. How do you interpret it?
Well, I just interpret it that we live in a sinful world, and that, we are called, our better natures are called to help address these issues. I mean, people, I think it's when people have a worldview that this is all there is, you know, so they can do whatever they want versus, you know, we are our brother's keeper. We're responsible for being good stewards we have to have leadership by adults. Adults have to, when adults show this type of activity and condone it, then kids think it's okay. And I do believe this part of the breakdown of the family and the issues that we have with our society.
You actually sounded like Sir Thomas More for just a moment, which is, you know, patron saint of politicians as of 2000 when the Pope was, of course, he got his head cut off by King Henry, but that's what I heard you saying. That's literally what I heard you saying. I've been reading about Sir Thomas More, and he talks about in his book Utopia that if a person doesn't believe in God, that there's no way that they can be a politician because they don't believe that there's an authority outside of themselves that they are accountable to.
Yeah.
And I that's what I heard you saying right now. And I think as a politician and former teacher and all the things that you've done in the past, that, you know, the knowing that you are responsible to something outside of yourself, that it's not just you, you are not the center of the universe. First off, it's an epiphany when it happens to us all. But it's also crucial when it comes to how you behave and how you administer when you are a legislator.
Usually you learn it, but it depends on when. Do you know it and for your whole life, or you find out it at the end.
Right.
So I don't know.
I don't know. Hey, before I let you go, on a lighter note, you're once again seeking Valentines for soldiers.
Yeah, pretty cool. It's emerged and it continues to evolve, and I like the fact that schools use this at a lot of different levels to get for their artwork, and then we gather up these Valentines and we take them to the VA hospital there, or the one in Danville, or Cochrane in St. Louis, or try to get some overseas to veterans. And it's just a way. It's just a way in a different time of year to thank those who serve.
Yeah, and how, if people want to help you out on that, how would they do that?
Well, we have the office in Harrisburg that will receive them, and Jenny down there will arrange to come get them. They should just call the office in Harrisburg.
Okay, Congressman John Shimkus, once again, congratulations. John, don't be surprised if I try to get a hold of you tomorrow. Next week is going to be very busy, but I sure would like to have front row seat with your eyes for our listeners next week on what will be a very interesting. Well, it'd be 2 weeks from today's inauguration, isn't it?
But today is, we're counting the Electoral College votes in the chamber.
Yeah, certification of the presidential vote is in Congress today, isn't it?
That's right, at 1 o'clock.
All right, Congressman John Shimkus. John, another good week, but you know, time's coming. People want to see some proof in the pudding. And here we are. We're here right now, and it's happening. And we're all very curious to watch what's going on. And then, I mean, more curious to see how major media, which nobody seems to trust anymore. I was reading the new Rasmussen poll numbers on that. You watch CNN, 33% of the people there, only 33% of people who watch CNN believe what they're seeing. 33%. 43% MSNBC. Yeah. Lower than that, you know? Anyway, Congressman John Shimkus. John, thanks again, pal.
All right. Thank you.